The content of this program is for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Triangle Gardener Magazine, Dave's Garden e-newsletter, HGTV's Weekend Gardener, and NC State Extension Garden. And maybe from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tildner. We'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. Spring is a nature's way of saying, let's party. That was said by Robin Williams. Plant spring peas as a cool weather crop by Melody Rose. One of the first vegetables a gardener plants in spring are peas. Whether you prefer them in the pod, shelled, or just the pods, spring peas are a welcome treat after a long winter. They prefer cool conditions, grow quickly, and enrich the soil for later crops. They're pretty much a perfect vegetable. Peas are technically a fruit, since the pods are produced when the ovary of the flower is pollinated. This isn't the only vegetable slash fruit people commonly misidentify. Tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, and squash, and okra are also technically fruit. Up until medieval times, peas were only harvested after they matured and pods dried. Peas were used to make porridge and considered a wintertime staple. It wasn't until sometime in the 17th century it became fashionable to eat peas fresh. The French tagged them with the name mangetout, which means eat it all, and the modern love affair with fresh spring peas began. Sometime later, 1835, the children's story, The Princess and the Pea, was penned by Hans Christian Andersen. To prove she was a princess, mother of the prince placed a pea under 20 mattresses the girl slept on. She complained the next morning something under her mattress kept her awake all night, so the old queen knew the girl's claim was true, since only a princess would be that sensitive. Peas were popular in England during this time, and many new varieties were developed. Peas came across the Atlantic with settlers to the New World and were a popular crop there as well. It's said that Thomas Jefferson loved peas so much he grew no less than 30 varieties in his vast gardens at his Monticello estate. Peas are quite nutritious, and most people should consider including them in their diets. The people who should limit them are those taking blood thinners, since they must avoid foods containing vitamin K. Diabetics can even have peas in moderation. They rank low on the glycemic index scale and contain fiber and protein, which slows digestion and helps maintain good blood sugar levels. They contain significant amounts of vitamin A, B1, and C, along with iron, zinc, and manganese. They have antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties, which can reduce the risk of cancer when eaten regularly. Pea pods are best eaten fresh, lightly steamed, or in stir fries. Shelled peas are also good when prepared this way. Including them in soups and casseroles is tasty, too. I like peas and pea pods stir-fried with pieces of sweet pepper, spiralized zucchini, and a few carrots. Tossed with a bit of soy sauce, balsamic vinegar, honey and Dijon mustard, and a few strips of pork chop I've seared, makes for a tasty, light supper. Early spring is best time to plant peas. Some old-timers say they need to be planted on Valentine's Day, going so far as to take a pick to the frozen ground. Mid-March is better for those of us in the middle part of the country. In West Kentucky, most of our below-freezing temperatures are behind us, and frosts, light freezes, and even light snow won't hurt them. I tend to advise folks to plant their peas about a month before their last frost date. That's April 15th in my area. Plant peas where they receive at least 8 hours of full sunlight in well-worked ground with some organic compost mixed in. Seeds should be spaced about 2 inches apart and 1 inch deep. If you have access to wood ashes, that's a great source of phosphorus and great for them as well. Avoid too much nitrogen. You'll have lots of pretty vines and leaves, but your harvest will be small since nitrogen promotes foliage growth instead of fruits. For climbing types, be sure to provide some type of trellis. Many gardeners simply push pruned branches into the ground beside their plants. This keeps them off the ground and makes the peas easier to see. It takes between 6 and 8 weeks after planting for peas to start producing. When it's time to harvest, pick carefully. Hold the pea in one hand, support the vine with the other so you don't damage the plant. Store in the refrigerator and use within 3 or 4 days. Peas are an early crop, and once they are finished, gardeners have the luxury of planting something else in their place for the remainder of the season. Since they secure nitrogen in the soil, like all legumes, it's free fertilizer for nitrogen-hungry plants. Just a few of those would be broccoli, corn, cabbage, leeks, spinach, and Swiss chard. Spring means green, and there's nothing greener than early peas. They're easy to grow, nutritious, and produce a quick crop, so there's no excuse for not planting some. From HGTV Weekend Gardener, how to use coffee grounds in the garden. Before taking spent coffee grounds to your yard, learn the facts about your garden caffeine fix. As clocks sprang ahead to daylight saving time, that lost hour of sleep spent most of us reaching for a second cup of joe. Those extra cups create lots of used coffee grounds at home and in shops around the country. If your favorite barista is bagging grounds to go for garden use, hit the pause button before you grab a few bags. Learn what you need to know about using coffee grounds in the garden. What they do. If you tune into the Grounds for Gardens channel, you'll learn people count on coffee grounds to do all sorts of things. Spread on planting ground beds like mulch. Grounds are said to repel cats, fertilize soil, kill slugs, and keep weeds at bay. Coffee mulch is also rumored to beckon earthworms and acidify soil. Other gardeners work coffee grounds into beds, saying it aerates and acidifies soil. Just the Java facts. There's limited research on using coffee grounds in the garden, and much involves tests to determine if grounds are acidic. Most are. What happens as grounds break down? They eventually shift from acid to more or less neutral pH. Testing grounds on various agricultural crops, it either enhances or deters growth, depending on the plant. As with most rumors, even ones about coffee grounds contain a grain of truth. While they haven't been found to repel or kill pests, they have some antimicrobial properties. In specific controlled research conditions, they have suppressed some diseases, fungus rots and wilts on spinach, bean, tomato, and cucumber. Could you replicate those conditions in a garden? Likely not. In terms of fertilizing soil, coffee grounds do have significant nitrogen content, so they help improve soil fertility. But they also affect microorganisms in soil, plant growth, and possibly soil pH, so you do not want to rely on coffee grounds as plant food. Several independent pH tests show coffee grounds tend to be acidic. In most cases, the grounds are too acidic to be used directly on soil, even for acid-loving plants like blueberries, azaleas, and hollies. Coffee grounds inhibit the growth of some plants, including geranium, asparagus fern, Chinese mustard, and Italian ryegrass. Conversely, grounds as mulch and compost improve yields of soybeans and cabbage. In other cases, grounds inhibit seed germination of clovers, red and white, and alfalfa. On the flip side, coffee grounds enhance sugar beet seed germination. The effects of coffee grounds on seeds and plants is variable, unreliable, and tough to call. So what's the right course of action? Follow these tips for the best success in repurposing grounds in your garden. Compost them. The safest way is to use coffee grounds is adding to compost. Take care to add grounds so they comprise only 10 to 20% of your total compost volume. Any higher, they might inhibit good microbes from breaking down organic matter. Another way is to add 4 parts shredded leaves to 1 part coffee grounds by weight. Some still suggest adding lime or wood ash to the compost to offset the initial acidity of the grounds. You can do that, but it's not really necessary. If you want to do it, aim for a ratio of 1 cup of lime or ash to 10 pounds of grounds. Spread thinly and cover. Using coffee grounds as a thick mulch is not a great idea. They tend to compact, forming a barrier that doesn't let air or water pass. If you want to spread grounds on soil, use a thin layer, 1/2 inch tops, covered with a thicker layer, 2 to 4 inches of organic matter, such as shredded bark, wood chips, or compost. Shift soil pH. If your goal is to acidify notoriously alkaline soils west of the Mississippi River, take a soil test first to know your soil's pH. If you need to acidify it, dig grounds into soil to a depth of 7 to 8 inches. Now from the NC Gardener Extension Gardener. A Plant Watch. Hybrid Winter Blooming Witch Hazels. Hybrid winter blooming witch hazels, blooming as early as late January, are a must-have for your garden. They offer almost 30 days of blooms, fall foliage color, and hardiness in zones 4 through 9. All plants commonly referred to as witch hazel are in the genus Harnamelius. These winter blooming hybrids make up a group of hybrids between H. japonica and H. mollis. The species name indicates they have intermediate characteristics between the other two species. The plants are loosely branched, multi-stemmed shrubs, or small trees, usually 15 to 20 feet tall. With pruning, a specimen can be maintained as a single trunk tree. It prefers full sun and moist soil. Cultivars have bloom colors ranging from bright yellow to red. Noteworthy cultivars include Arnold's Promise with yellow blooms, Diane Red, and Jelena Coppery Orange. For more pictures and information, visit plants.cesu.edu/plants/all/hemimelis-x-intermedia-h-x-media/. And sustainability. Gardening by the book. The North Carolina Extension Gardener Handbook is a national award-winning gardening and landscaping guide. Written by North Carolina State Extension specialists and agents, it has the latest research-based information on soils, composting, design, propagation, gardening, and pest management. It is a fundamental reference for both seasoned gardeners as well as beginners, explaining the why and how of growing fruits, vegetables, nuts, lawns, native plants, ornamental trees, shrubs, vines, ground covers, and plants in containers. The handbook includes 728 pages, 21 chapters, 8 appendices, 1,067 color images, a map, 109 tables, an index, and a glossary. This is the text used in the NC Extension Master Gardener Volunteer Initial Training Program. It is available free online and as a hardback or ebook. Visit go.ncsu.edu/intro-ej-handbook. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, we have some events coming up. The Camellia Open House is happening April 5 through 7, the 13th through the 15th, and the 19th through the 21st, Friday and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Sunday, 12 noon to 5 p.m. See camellias in bloom at the Camellia Forest Nursery in Chapel Hill. For more information, call 919-968-0504. 919-968-0504. And a plant sale April the 6th, 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. Piedmont Chapter of the North American Rock Garden Society. Hundreds of plants of interest, not just to rock gardeners, but to garden enthusiasts of any description. And that's going to be held at Ralston Blooms at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. And Ralston Blooms, April the 6th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Learn, shop for your garden, get great ideas, and enjoy gourmet treats while supporting the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. A spring plant sale, birdhouse competition, gardening talks, hands-on fun for children and families, artists and craftsmen, food trucks, and NC State Howling Cow ice cream cups. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at J.C. Ralston Arboretum at NC State University in Raleigh. Call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132 for more information. And the annual Evelyn McNeil Sims Lecture, the Southeastern Grasslands Initiative, April the 7th, 2:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Join us for a fascinating and stereotype-shattering tour of North Carolina's natural landscapes just a few hundred years ago. Bison, prairies, and sun-loving wildflowers, and it's free, but pre-registration is required. For more information, call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522. This happens at the North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. And a spring plant sale is coming up April the 13th, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Paul J. Xener Botanical Garden, located at 215 South Main Street in Kernersville. And a spectacular spring tulip bloom, April 13th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Enjoy thousands of bulbs blooming in a glorious celebration of spring, and it's free. Refreshments will be served, and this will also happen at the Paul J. Xener Botanical Garden, located at 215 South Main Street in Kernersville. And Weeds 101, April the 13th, from 2 p.m. to 3:30. History of weeds, their impact on ecosystems and our economy. Ways to identify weeds and strategies for their management. And there is a fee and pre-registration is required. Call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522. And this will happen at the North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. And an open house weekend, April 13 through 14. Plant specials and more. This will happen at the Atlantic Gardening Company located in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-878-8877. 919-878-8877. And in the garden, March through April, flowers, don't let weeds go to seed. Pull them now or Apply a pre-emergent in your flower beds to keep weeds from taking over. When selecting summer annuals, look for short, bushy plants with green leaves, well-developed root systems, and more buds than flowers. Wait until after danger of frost, around April 15, before planting. Wait until spring bulb foliage dies down before removing it. Fertilize with bone meal after blooming. Pruning back your butterfly bush to the 6 to 18 inch range forces new growth closer to the crown and usually better flower displays. For fruits and vegetables, plant potatoes, onion sets, beets and radishes, and transplant cabbage, broccoli, and similar members of the cabbage family. These vegetables can withstand a light frost without damage. You can direct seed sweet corn, pole beans, lima and snap beans, cantaloupe, cucumbers, summer squash, and watermelons after April 15. Wait until the end of April to set out tomatoes, peppers, and eggplant. Plant blueberries, strawberries, blackberries, and muscadine grapes in late March or April. Try growing your veggie garden in containers if you don't have space in the yard. Remember, these need 6 to 8 hours of direct sun. And regarding insects, look for cool season mites on junipers, arborvitae, azaleas, hollies, and camellias. These mites are often only noticed after the damage is done. Interior browning of foliage in early summer, and when the pests are no longer present. If present, they will be very active in March. Spray as needed. Now for Tips from the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. Soil chemistry made simple. Sometimes a plant's poor performance results from the wrong pH. Test your soil to determine its degree of acidity or alkalinity. Your county agent can tell you how to send soil to the state university for testing, or you can buy a home test kit. Do this in the fall. There's less waiting then, since soil labs are not as busy. If the test indicates lime is needed, applying it in the fall means the soil and lime have time to react before spring planting. Some plants that like sweet soils, alfalfa, clover, asparagus, brassicas, legumes, cucurbits, beets, chard, clematis, lilacs, and iris. Some plants that like acid soils, watermelon, blueberries, strawberries, potatoes, broadleaves, evergreens. Potatoes must have either acid or very alkaline soil. If the soil is acid, below a pH of 5, or alkaline, above a pH of 7.5, then they are fine. Otherwise, they get scab. In the East, it's easier to make sure the soil is acid. In Idaho, the alkaline soil gives the characteristic dry, mealy quality that state's famous potatoes. To make soil more acid, add elemental sulfur, 1/3 pound per 25 square feet to lower pH 1 unit. To make soil more alkaline, add lime, 1 pound per 25 square feet to raise pH 1 unit. Wood ashes also increase the alkalinity of soil. Use half the amount. You know that ashes from the fireplace are fine for the garden, but you're not about to trudge through the snow to scatter them there, so you dump them in a cardboard box and put it in the garage. That spells trouble. If there's a single ember in those ashes, it's likely to set the cardboard afire. Use a metal can. A trash can is fine for wood ashes. It will keep them dry until you scatter them in the spring. Limit the ashes to 1 or 2 10-quart pails to 1,000 square feet each year. In the north, we're finding vegetable gardens with soils too alkaline because wood-burning families have been piling the ashes on for several years. Have fun with hydrangea color. by controlling the pH of the soil. Acid soil, pH of 4.5 to 5.5, produces blue flowers. Alkaline soil, a pH of 7 to 7.5, gives pink ones. And let others do the work. Have you selected a new garden site, but now you want to prepare it? You can spade it, but that's hard work. Try covering it with black plastic in 1 month, and often less. All plant life under the plastic will die, and the soil will have a delightfully soft, moist quality. For a much more thorough job, put a hog or two in the area. Pigs will prepare the area more completely than a rototiller. They will eat all the weeds and their roots and will turn over the soil and fertilize it. Row markers. Look, Ma, no strings. A picket fence on a hoe? I glanced at the weird contraption lying on the ground next to Ray Lambert's garden. That's my row marker, he chuckled. My grandfather had a homemade row marker. I used features of his and added my own ideas. To the blade of an old garden hoe, he attached horizontally a 3-foot length of 1 by 2 inch lumber. On either end, he centered a 1-foot length of lumber, pointed on each end like a picket fence, perpendicular to the first piece, protruding from the underside at 1-foot intervals, are 2 more pointed pieces, each 6 inches long. Ray combines elements of wide row, raised bed, and square bed methods in his garden. He can use the side of the row marker with 3-foot spacing to lay out a 3-foot wide row, or to mark the location of 2 rows of strawberry plants, 3 feet apart. He can flip the marker over and pull it carefully down the center of a raised bed to mark out 1 foot spacing. Then pull it across the bed at right angles to the first set of marks to make a grid. If he needs 6-inch spacing, he can move the marker over for a second pull, halfway between the first marks. His versatile and efficient tool eliminates tedious measuring and stretching of strings. Pretty clever. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long, until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.